always be Jenny Russell. Welcome to Her Health and Happiness right here on UK Health Radio, your only real feel-good radio station, now available on podcasts on every platform, whichever way you listen to your podcasts, Android or Apple. We are here to serve you. How are you doing? Dancing shoes on. I hope, like me, you to remember that you are blessed and highly favored, a magnet for miracles, the solution to someone's problem, and the answer to somebody's prayer. And I do hope this week, when we talk about back pain and pain in general, this show will be the answer you have been waiting to hear. Her Health and Happiness is dedicated to all aspects of female intimate health and the whole person. And this week, I am talking back pain, and I'm talking pain in general. And I'm blessed to be speaking with Dr. Amika Okorochu and also Dr. Simon Erich. And we are looking at what kind of pain people are struggling with and giving them options that will really help. But honestly, as a black woman, black and beautiful, dark and lovely, fearfully and wonderfully made, it would be remiss of me if I did not talk about female intimate health and how it impacts us in terms of statements made by certain people. Yes, I'm talking about Diane Abbott and Frank Hester. I'm not going to labour on the point for a long time, but I do need to talk. I do need to also say, you know, Kemi Badenoch, you are doing black women no favours whatsoever. Absolutely no favours whatsoever. The statement was racist. And the fact that a man can turn around and say, when I look at Diane Abbott, it makes me want to hate all black women. I don't even know who you are, but I know who you are now. And I don't see why I should be somebody you hate. My sister should be somebody you hate. My mother, who brought me into this world, should be somebody you hate. That is such a, hate is such a strong word. But it also speaks to the fact that there's this, you know, there is this privilege that you feel that you have to make those kind of statements. And as a Christian, we do believe in forgiveness, right? But there's, you know, the remission of sins. But this is ridiculous. That's a statement and a half. I'm not saying I cannot forgive the man. And you can separate the person from the behavior. But that statement is inflammatory. It incites racial hatred. It gives those people who are extremists that carte blanche to say, well, look, see, if an MP can sit there, or a lord or whatever he is can stay there and make those comments, then yes, it's great. Why won't the Conservatives give the money back? I'm not really sure I understand that whole notion about give the money back. I get it to a point, but I'm not sure. But I do know that you look into him, and his wife is a GP, and she was struggling to be able to get patients' notes put together. So he developed a software, which is now in all the GP practices. He has been able to make over £400 million from government funding, right? And he's still, that's why he's given the government £10 million, because he's looking for more ways to make more money. During this pandemic, all these things that you know, see that report, you know, where they were doing the inquiry about it, it's all gone under the carpet. But look how many of them made sure they looked after their friends, and their friends got kickbacks and they got contracts. They keep the money circling inside of themselves. Kemi Badenoch said, let's focus on what the party's doing. The party's here to help people change lives and to help people get things better. So I want to know, Kemi, how did you change the lives of all those who suffered with and suffer from still the effects of the Windrush generation and the Windrush, when suddenly you conveniently, the Home Office conveniently lost people's passports and paperwork. Oh, they just shredded it. And then just turned around and said, right, you're not welcome. You put big buses and you say, immigrants, go home. But you forget that the same immigrants you were deporting back to the West Indies are the same ones you invited over here to build back the country that was destroyed after the war. So we're good for something. And that's the thing that's quite disturbing. But we can still be, and we still are, a forgiving race, right? But you've got to be careful about the statements you make. and expect us not to say anything back in return, it's not good. It's really not good. But that's all I've got to say on the subject, because I need to move on. There's so much to cover today. So, we played our last Winter League match yesterday. We sadly lost 9-7. It was such a good fought match. And I'm not always the best person at the net, so it was excellent to hear somebody say, avoid that girl at the net. I mean, I was on it like a hot rash. I played my socks off yesterday. It was my debut as captain. I'm now captain of the fourth team moving forwards into the Summer League. And so it was a very exciting time. I was very, very excited, very happy. We played really, really well. I'm excited as well because this week, Tony Robbins, it's my first time to ever do a full Tony Robbins course that starts literally in 24 hours. And I'm just excited to just really be able to step out as this new person. So listen out for me next week when I come and share what I learned and how I've changed and how my life is going to be transformed and how I'm able to still continue to transform lives. To that end, for my listeners that are here and you want to see me in person, Thursday, the 4th of April, I will be at Sacred Ground in the heart of Soho. It's just off Dean Street. It's a wonderful little coffee shop, and I am going to be empowering women and women's wellness in the heart of Soho. I'm doing a one-woman stand-up. It starts at 6 o'clock. It is free. All you do need to do is register for the event. So if you email me, pelvicsecrets@icloud.com, pelvicsecrets@icloud.com, I will send you the link for the registration so that you can come. There are only 40 spaces. So if you want to come along, hear a one-woman show, see the stand-up, come and do some networking and enjoy, then I would love to have you there. Now, I shared an article yesterday, and that article was to do with uterine prolapse. So I want to encourage females also. I have worked successfully with women to help them avoid surgery for prolapse and to reverse the grade of their prolapse. But 4 years ago, I was approached, and the lady that approached did not want to make the investment. The investment is not into me. The investment is into yourself to be coached and acquire the education and the tools so that you can make sure that you can live life better and without pain or fear or debilitation. So it doesn't cost you. But what happened was this lady approached, she did not do it. Now I got an email this week to ask if I can help. Here's the thing. She had an operation to repair uterine prolapse. But you learn nothing, so she makes no changes. So the very thing that caused a prolapse is now returned. The operation has reversed. But the organ is now, her inner world has now become a part of her outer world. It's actually protruding out of her anatomy. And so I'm asked if I can help. And sadly, all I can say is not until the operation has been done. It's not, the uterus is not really an organ you can just prop back inside. So a hysterectomy is what she needs to experience. And she wants to have a private operation. It's £15,000. Here's the thing. Once she has that operation, the second one, she still, even more so, needs the coaching and the tools. So it's not £15,000 she needs to find. It's £15,000 to do the operation privately. It's then the further £8,000, £10,000, £12,000, £14,000. She needs a year's coaching at least. So that's £15,000 almost she needs to find. So all of a sudden, she needs to find £30,000. But it's not just the cost that she needs to find. We find this for new cars. It's not just the cost of that. It's what has it cost her in terms of work, life, quality of life. What does the uterus do? There's hormone conversation with the ovaries for cardiovascular and brain function and cognition. There is pelvic and spinal stability that the uterus plays a major role in. It acts as a buffer to stop the bowel prolapsing onto the bladder. So the increased risk of a further prolapse of the bladder or the bowel or even the upper vaginal vault becomes something she may experience. It affects gait and movement ability. There's so many things that it affects, but your confidence, your wardrobe choice, your social connections, your productivity, your performance, your body shape can put you straight into early menopause when you're not even ready for that. You can measure cost in many ways. So if you're a powerful woman or a woman out there and you're experiencing a dragging sensation and you've got a prolapse, please, honestly, the NHS doesn't have the resources. You're going to have to dig deep. But if you choose not to dig today, it would have cost her 4.5 years ago. It would have cost her £6,000, £7,000. It's literally 4 times that amount now. Plus the mental, emotional stress that comes in, which then acidifies the body internally and opens the floodgates for so many other issues. So I pray, as we move into our first trial and then listen to this interview as well, listen to the things around back pain, because not all back pain is created equal. And we do talk about the cordu iguana, which if you don't catch in 8 hours, can render you doubly incontinent for life, have no control downstairs. There is a lot to learn about our bodies. We are fearfully and wonderfully made. We are blessed and highly favoured. We just need to recognise the blessing.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
When you wake up in the morning, and do you struggle to get out of bed? Do you struggle to bend over? Do you struggle to put your trousers on? Do you struggle with back pain? Do you struggle with pain? Today, I am blessed to be speaking with Dr. Amika Okorocha and Dr. Simon Edridge. And we are speaking about 8 in 10 Brits that are struggling with day-to-day living because of pain. So guys, welcome to Her Health and Happiness.
Hi, Jenny.
Hi, cheers. Thanks for having us, Jenny.
Oh, it's my pleasure. So, yes, physical ailments that, oh, I can't move in the morning. What has your research found?
So, we're working with the Health Desperation Campaign with Curaleaf Clinic, who've done some research on a survey of 2,000 people showing that, yes, about 80% of people who are suffering with chronic pain and back issues such as arthritis and fibromyalgia are struggling with day-to-day living. So these may be day-to-day activities, as you mentioned, such as getting out of bed, putting on your clothes, washing, going up and down the stairs. Obviously, this could be very debilitating and detrimental for people in everyday life. And health professionals such as myself and Simon obviously would primarily advise preventative medicine. So this can maybe self-done physiotherapy at home. So, you know, exercise, stretching, low weight based exercises, which can provide a benefit. If this has failed, obviously, then we go to medication. And then when other conventional medications have failed, then we'd like to advise patients that there are other options, such as exploring alternative therapies.
Okay. I mean, that's a wide range there. So I'm going to unpack it, because I'm a nutrition and lifestyle coach. So I do a lot of work around postural correction as well. So I do a lot of that stuff. Now, Sassy Sexy 61, I do get a few little, and I used to compete in the old days. So I feel like what we did in the old days comes back to haunt you a bit later on. So how do you get to assess people? Because obviously you've got different considerations. You've got weight, you've got posture, you've got obviously the age of their mattress, possibly their lifestyle habits. How do you get to assess them?
That's a very good question. I think, especially when it comes to back pain specifically, this is one of the most debilitating diseases we have in the Western world, especially here in the UK, with an aging population. So every patient is very different. Mm. I feel like you don't pay every patient under one brush. You'd assess everyone differently. So you'd assess the nature and cause of the back pain, because there's certain types of back pain that could be more insidious than others. There could be primary back pain. There could be secondary back pain caused by another condition, for example, where you might have a weakening of your bone density, and this may cause a microfracture, and this may be the cause of the back pain, in which we need to be explored fully, and we need to tackle the more primary, more pressing issue. There could be natural osteoarthritic back pain that's just due to degenerative disease, where there's no fracture, and it's just basically lifestyle changes and posture, and maybe core exercises that can provide some sort of benefit. Then there could be acute back pain, which could be caused by trauma or a significant injury. So it basically comes down to a severe examination and a history. Often this is going to be done in GP, in primary care. Sometimes this could be done by myself in secondary care or in A&E, especially if you come in for what you might think is an acute issue or a potential fracture. And after you've assessed the nature and causes of the back pain, elicited anything sinister, done our scans, et cetera, et cetera, that's when we're going to go into different treatment methods based on what we found.
Yeah, that's a great answer. But Dr. Simon, I'm going to bring you in as well now, because I think what you find with people, I specialize in pelvic health, so I specialize in pelvic floor. The compliance is the reason why people struggle. So they'll go for the medical intervention because it's a lot to do with sometimes. What I get from a lot of clients is the exercise seems so basic, it's boring. So, which is really weird. So people want to go and do all the high intensity stuff. But obviously, if they're doing all the high intensity stuff with poor posture, they're going to have poorer movement ability. And they've already got a debilitation. How do you kind of guide people in which way to go? And again, like you said, you know, a car crash, any kind of impact sport could actually cause a problem with the back. And then, of course, you've got issues with, you know, the back starts from the base of the head, right? So is it an upper back issue? Is it a mid-back issue? Is it a low back issue?
Yeah, you're so right, Jenny. And I think the important thing to consider with any type of pain is you need to be addressing all of the factors that may be contributing to why the pain happened in the first place and why you're going to have that pain. I mean, in medical terms, we refer to this as like the biopsychosocial approach, when really that's, you know, that's addressing what is the underlying biology, what is causing that pain to happen. Is it a joint degeneration like we were talking about earlier? Are there psychological issues that are contributing to the severity of that pain? You know, when someone has pain, that is a true symptom. It's never something that you'd ever suggest that is any in anyone's head. Mm-hmm. But know that someone's psychological state can definitely make your pain seem worse, or indeed if you are having a really positive experience, that can make your pain seem better. And also those social things that are going on in your life, whether you're able to exercise, see friends, etc., all contributes to the treatment of someone's pain. And it's about flexing in the right things in order to be able to address that. And like you said at the beginning of the question, which I've now drifted quite far away from, which is about sort of doing those things to, those basic things to help with prevention of pain. I think those are really important. But what I commonly see as well in my work as a doctor on the kind of the other end of the spectrum is people who are in so much pain that they find it difficult to engage with, whether it be exercise or some physiotherapies or other therapies. And that's kind of what's brought out here in some of the research that we've been doing, is that people are going to the extreme lengths of either taking illicit substances or too much of prescribed medications. And you know, one of the key messages that we want to get across in this campaign is making sure that you are seeking legal, regulated medications if that is the right thing for you.
Mm. And I think that's it. The funny thing is people get a little niggle. We get the niggle and it's like, we'll leave it. Leave it until it becomes something where, like you said, when it gets to the point where it's debilitating, and then it becomes an emergency for them. And I think one of the things that people are struggling with now is obviously getting a doctor's appointment is not that easy anymore. So that could take time. And it's how they describe their symptoms as to how soon they'll get their appointment. Then if they go to A&E, it depends on how long you have to wait in A&E and whether or not, you know, you can take that pain. I mean, I was in A&E about 2 months ago, because I had an excision and it had created a hematoma. Mm. And when I was in, I mean, literally, I walked through to the urgent treatment center. By the time I got there, I was in so much pain, the lady could see, she took me over in a wheelchair. So that gave me, one, it gave me a seat. There were no seats when I got there. But two, it just, it kind of pushed me a little bit further in the queue. But when I was there, the amount of people that were there, the amount of people in, there was a lady that was like 90 something, and they were telling her she's going to have to wait 6 hours. It's like, in the end, her children just took her home. She just said, I want to go home. I can't stay here all night. It's like, that's why people are going off to take the wrong kind of medication. So what I think the question really is how do we educate people as to don't wait till it gets to that point there? And then how do they describe that so they get directed or pushed in the right direction? Does that make sense?
Sorry, just phrase that question again.
I have to go through all of that again. What I'm saying is a lot of people wait to the last minute, right?
Yes.
And then when they go, if I go to the doctor and I say, doctor, I've got back pain.
Yes.
It's a generic statement. But yes. If I said, like, you know, I know the pain's coming from L5, S1, and I know 75% of my range of movement is in those two discs there, and this is my livelihood, it's a different conversation. Now, one, yes. I kind of know what I'm talking about, and two, it's going to push me further up the queue. People wait. They depend on how they describe their symptoms, or depend on how soon they get seen. And if they go to A&E and it's busy like that, they may walk out. How do we guide people to, one, not wait to the last minute, but two, to be able to explain their symptoms better? Or, because a lot of things are online now, how can the questions be phrased so that you can answer the questions more specifically?
I think that's a very good point. I think the main thing from my perspective in terms of patient education is I want patients to be aware of red flag symptoms. Symptoms when they need to come in sooner rather than later. We know with back pain, it contributes to a lot of the symptoms that people generally describe in primary care to their doctors. And many times back pain can be managed conservatively by conventional means. However, if you're a patient and you're getting back pain, you're also getting incontinence, for example, or paresthesia and lack of sensation in the saddle area or region, and this is acute back pain, for example, I'm worrying potentially about something like corticotrauma. If you've had back pain, you've had severe weight loss, you've had B-type symptoms, I'm thinking, ooh, could this be a microfracture from, you know, a myeloma or something like that? So It depends. I'm worried about the type and nature of your back pain and then the red flags that have come with your back pain previously. Like, have you had a previous cancer, for example, and now you're having back pain? Could this be a metastasis? Stuff like that. If you're naturally quite fit and well, you don't really have many comorbidities, you're not really taking many medications that could, you know, impact your bone density, for example, I'm not thinking of anything sinister, then this could maybe be like, okay, listen, your back pain seems like quite primary, simple back pain based on, I don't know, your lifestyle or what you do. If you tell me you're a construction worker and you're lifting heavy stuff every day and you have been doing it for the last 20 years and you have back pain, I'm not as worried as if you tell me, oh, I've had sensation loss, suddenly come on, I can't urinate, I'm incontinent, I have severe back pain right now, and my bladder's full. There's two different types of back pain, and I'm going to manage it in two different types of ways. One patient I want to see today. The other patient, I can suggest some conservative methods which may ease the back pain. If they haven't eased, have you tried this? If you haven't tried this, okay, come in, let's give you a full workup, let's give you a scan. So I think it's patient education. So going to reputable sources, such as, you know, NHS UK and patient.uk, and where we have, you know, medical professionals who've actually given out articles which are relatable for patients. And then you can actually realize, hang on, this is the kind of back pain I'm having. Is this back pain higher up? Is this lumbar back pain? Is it cervical back pain? Is this thoracic back pain? What could be causing it? And based on that, that's what you're going to go in and tell your GP, because chances are most people suffering with a chronic condition such as back pain are going to see their GP first. If you have an acute back pain, then obviously you go into A&E, that's probably going to be a little bit different pathway in terms of how we treat you. Not every patient will know this. And a lot of patients, unfortunately, don't have the correct education to understand their back pain and understand how to communicate it. Most of the time we're seeing patients in a clinical setting, you're only going to get about 10, 15 minutes to try and explain, take a history, examine. This is very, very quick. If you know more about your condition, you can tell me exactly how long it's been happening, where it's been happening, any associated symptoms you've had, et cetera. Have you had a back pain in the past, the severity, the nature, the character of the pain? This is going to give me a better idea of how I'm going to treat you. Does that make sense?
So patients, it makes 100% sense.
If patients knew that information before coming to me, obviously this is going to be much quicker. When you're talking to the triage nurse about your back pain, they're going to be able to see this and it's going to make it much quicker. But unfortunately, not every patient has that education. So I advise patients to, you know, look at those resources for themselves if they can. If they can't, that's completely fine. Everyone has a different level of education, and that's normal. That's what we're here for. 24-hour service. You come in, you see us, we'll go through it and we'll elicit whether or not it's an emergency or whether or not it's something that could be referred and alternative therapies can be reached.
Fantastic answer. Now, I'm going to pick on the one thing that you said there, because I'm going to say that next, right? It's the cord iguana, because I've known two people that have actually struggled with that. And I think, you know, I say to a lot of people that not all back pain is created equal. Like you said, thoracic, cervical, lumbar. But people, I think this is where an education needs to come in, especially for back pain. And that's why I love this conversation today. Because something like a cord iguana is massive. And it will just change the whole trajectory of your life. If it's not caught within 8 hours, and no, they could leave you doubly incontinent. So I had an office from 2013 until last year when they closed down number one. I had an office in number one Harley Street. When I first moved in there, the lady that was running that used to be a figure skater back in her country. And she had a cord iguana, but because of all the figure skating and, you know, you can get your injuries, she just assumed it was back pain. It was back pain, it was back pain. And it was too late. So then she ended up with the bags, doubly incontinent, and it cost her her job, cost her relationship as well, because she hadn't had her children yet. She was only in her early 30s, but she said, like, you know, you can't control. You're having a board meeting, you've got flatulence, you could got no control down there. Yeah. And that was the first time I'd even heard about cord iguana, and that was like in 2014. And I was like, wow, these are, you know, and especially when I specialize in pelvic floor, it's like, this is massive. Women don't understand. And I met another lady last year who had struggled with that. And actually, they actually thought it was going to cost her life, but she had a great surgeon, which we give thanks for. But I think this is where the education needs to come in, because something like a cord iguana is a massive, whether it's female or male, is a massive, massive life-changing event if it's not caught early enough. So it's not a back pain you ignore. And the back pain linked to the either not being able to go to the toilet or the loss of control of the toilet, they need to come together. A lot of times people have a back pain when they may have incontinence, but they may have had a little issue before and they don't link the two things together. So when they come to see someone like yourselves, they don't, unless they're asked the right questions, they don't give that information. How do we get people to understand? Because I think that's a really big one that people need to understand.
I think that's a really good question. I think myself, as a health professional, I consider myself a good health professional. That's something I need to be able to elicit, because you can't expect the patient to always know. So that these are questions I will have to ask. Any good health professional is going to have to ask these patients around. Because you might be saying, oh, have you suffered from anything else? The patient may not say it, because maybe it's something that's been chronic. They've had a little bit of a leak here and there, or a little bit of incontinence here and there, and they may not be saying, they might be embarrassed to say, but these are specific questions I need to ask. I may need to do a PR exam, for example. I may need to do a bladder scan for somebody I suggest may have retaining from cord iguana. So this is something your health professional should know, because it's a medical emergency. It's what we get taught to identify. If one of us has missed it, that could be part of medical negligence on our part. It wouldn't be the patient's fault for not saying, oh, I've been incontinent. So in terms of what can a patient do, very little other than tell your doctor everything, from the little detail that you may not think is significant to the detail that you may be embarrassed about, everything. But in terms of chronic pain, cord iguana is only going to amount for a very small number of back pain. For the majority of people who are suffering from back pain, this is going to be like a chronic degenerative condition type back pain where they've tried a bunch of different things which haven't worked. They've tried medication that hasn't worked, and now they're looking for alternative therapies. Hence why what we're doing today in terms of partnering with Curaleaf for the Health Desperation Campaign is mainly to tackle chronic pain sufferers who are looking for alternative therapies where everything else has failed. Maybe they turn into illicit medication. Maybe they turn into over-medicate on opioids, for example, and those are going to have their own side effects. Those are going to have their own side effects in itself. So we want to kind of give people an alternative of what they can do, because the people sometimes have reached their boat. They'd be like, well, I've been prescribed the maximum dose of opioids. the maximum dose of NSAID medication, the maximum dose of paracetamol. I can't take anything else, and my pain is still not controlled. It's getting worse. I can't walk. I can't even get out of bed in the mornings. And that's why we're like, you know what? Listen, there are further options. You can self-refer. Your GP can refer you to potentially see a private clinical specialist who may be able to discuss the benefits of cannabis-based medications, which in 25% of people who have tried them have shown some sort of pain relief and so had an impact on the nature of their disease and their pain. So with something like quetiapine, yes, you're right. And it's something that most of the population won't know. You've known it because you're a public health specialist. I know it because I'm an A&E doctor. My colleagues know it because he's gone to medical school, he's worked. But most of the people, if you say quetiapine, they won't even know what that is.
And that's
the symptoms are. That's something that we're supposed to know as medical professionals. But most people in the community will know what chronic back pain is. Most people in England would have suffered it at some point. And so most people may have benefited from over-the-counter medication or even just physio, but there are some who won't. And for those people, they need to know that there are alternative therapies which may provide relief and benefit.
Fantastic answer. Now, I'm going to ask both of you, how do you tackle people who are overweight? How do you get them to recognize that maybe their weight and the excess weight and their posture and spending a lot of time sitting is contributing to their back pain? Because obviously we've got, the chair has been the bane of our life, to tell the truth. We sit, the phone, the kids are like this, their posture is really poor. So obviously they're just pushing their discs out. So they're causing lots of issues. Flat backs is causing a lot of problems with bulging discs and herniated discs. How do you get to educate? Because a lot of people won't want to think that their diet's got anything to do with it, which is strange. They don't think their chairs have got anything to do with it, or even their mattress. A lot of people have old mattresses. I bought a new mattress a couple of years ago, and I still rotate it 1 month and flip it the next month. And my friends are like, "You still do that?" And I'm like, "Yeah, because it's the integrity of the mattress and also the integrity of my back." But how do you deal with nutrition and lifestyle issues around that?
Yeah, I think the most important thing when you're dealing with people who have obesity is making sure that you adopt a compassionate approach. I think that everybody wants to be living their best life in the fullest health, and it's never anybody's necessarily fault, or there should never be any sort of personal attribution to someone having obesity. And I think it's important to be able to address lifestyle factors, whether that be diet or exercise or other social or psychological factors in an individual basis, because the reason why one person may be overweight will be maybe completely different to why another person is overweight. But we do know that increase in your weight can contribute to conditions such as osteoarthritis, for example, or lower back pain. You are exactly right. And I think the important thing is, as we've kind of talked about here a lot this morning, is about making sure you take that personalized approach to whatever you're doing when it comes to treatment. And so whether that is addressing someone's weight, or whether that is addressing their medications that they take. One of the things that we pride ourselves on at Curaleaf Clinic is making sure that we take a personalized approach to somebody's healthcare problems and their chronic pain. And actually, in terms of medicines, I can think of nothing that's more personalized in the way that we interact with patients than medical cannabis care, in the fact that we have so many different formulations of medical cannabis, whether that be dried flower for vaporization or oils to be taken under the tongue or pastilles. It's really about tailoring what the right medication is for the right patient. And that's not just medical cannabis, that's right across the board. That the key message is as always, as we say at Curaleaf, is making sure that we provide a personalized care to patients.
So Curaleaf, is that available right across England in different places, or is it?
Yeah, no, Curaleaf Clinic is available right across the UK, the Channel Islands, Isle of Man. We see thousands of patients every month who are affected with chronic pain, and you know they see a pain specialist to really unpick and understand whether they are a suitable candidate for medical cannabis, and then we continue to look after them from then onwards.
And so what's the strength of the medical cannabis? Because I mean, that's a break for actually to be able to talk about medical cannabis and not feel, you know.
Yes. So the medical cannabis comes in a number of different formulations. And like I said, it's all about personalized care. And what we do, the one thing that does apply to everyone is that we start at a low dose of either cannabidiol, CBD, or tetrahydrocannabinol, THC, and or both of them combined in a medication. And we slowly increase this over time. What we've seen through our research and from colleagues internationally is that people build up tolerance to the adverse events of cannabis before they develop tolerance to the potential therapeutic effects of it. So by starting at a low dose and increasing it slowly over time, we aim to reduce the potential adverse effects that can be attributed to the medication while seeking to maximize the therapeutic potential.
Which is great, because obviously there's a lot of CBD oils and a lot of stuff out there that people can take. And this is the difference, I suppose, it's not being measured.
Yeah, exactly. I think in terms of medical cannabis, we know that it's being manufactured to a pharmaceutical quality, whereas CBD oil that you purchase over the counter or that's contained within foodstuffs, it only has to meet food standards. So you're not getting that same assurance of quality and safety. There were studies that looked at CBD oils that were purchased on the internet and over the counter, and some of them found that they had higher than regulated amounts of THC inside them, and some of them didn't have the same levels of CBD that they claimed to have. So I think, you know, if you are someone who is interested in exploring CBD, for instance, specifically for a health condition, not for a wellness reason, it's really important to seek out through a specialist clinic like Curative.
Okay, fantastic. Well, guys, I think we've run out of time.
Thank you.
It's been a fantastic conversation. So where can people go to get more information?
Yeah, so at curativeclinic.com, we have a host of both educational resources for patients. And I know you obviously have a number of healthcare professionals who listen to the show as well. So we have loads of educational resources for them as well.
Fantastic. And Dr. Amika, are you still putting out some amazing videos?
Yes, I think I need to put an update video on back pain now.
Yeah. Listen, if you want to do one collaborated, hello. I'm ready to collaborate with you and do a collaborated, back pain one.
Put on the channel, because I'm sure you would have some valid information you could teach me from anecdotal evidence that you found from people you've worked with, and I could do the same. Collaborate, we all learn.
Okay, then. So I'm going to tell Jonathan, get some details, and let's get that done, because that'd be really, really good. But what's your social media handle so people can follow you anyway?
Oh, on most of them, Dr. Emeka. So that's DOCTOR.EMEKA. So if you type on Instagram or on Twitter with an underscore, you can follow me on there. Same thing on TikTok, where I release a lot of my educational, entertaining videos. So go follow me there.
I'm going to go and follow you there, then I'll send you a message, yeah?
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
So I really hope that helped you. I mean, like I said, there's all those red flags that come with it and everything. Because I think what happens is, you see lots of adverts. You've got voter rolls, I said in the interview, the joy of movement. You've got stuff that you can take. And as I mentioned, there was a lady, Harley Street, who was only 32. So she hadn't had children. She hadn't even had that experience. And she was the manager, at the gym, and not the gym, at first base at Harley Street. But to lose that ability to be able to feel anything from the waist down is really debilitating at such a young age. Now, that in terms of confidence, in terms of productivity, in terms of performance, in terms of relationships, that's costly. So, you know, I did an interview as well a few years ago, because one of my dear friends from college, my best friend from college, Annette, God rest her soul, died from pancreatic cancer. There was a lady I interviewed a few years back on my radio show, and she'd mentioned about being able to, I mean, she's one of the few people I know that actually survived 14 years post pancreatic cancer, because most people don't get that, because the diagnosis, by the time the pancreas is buried quite deep, so by the time it's sort of realised, it can be too late. But what she did mention was that if you start getting this real weird pain around your bra line and where the bra is at the back, that back pain, that could be a sign that the pancreas isn't happy. And that I've always remembered. And it's you know, as healthcare professionals, as medical professionals, we have, you know, a degree is literally a degree of information about a subject. A lot of times for many of us, we also learn from the patients and the patient's experiences, because we cannot know everything. But what we can do is we can learn from the patients that come in front of us and be able to, when we understand the whole person, we can see the relationship between the symptoms they've got and their history and be able to relate it. We understand the meridians, for instance. We use meridians as well to understand the organs cannot talk. Our organs can't talk, so they talk through muscles and joints. So we already know, obviously, for somebody that may be having a heart attack, don't always have the same symptoms, but most of the time for heart attacks, you'll get that numbness down the left arm, you know, a numbness in the shoulder. So it's, you know, the arm is, obviously, it's in the vicinity, but that's where the pain radiates to. When it comes to kidney issues, for instance, possibly, then that can come out as back pain as well. Or it can come out as knee pain also. Bladder issues are the same. The kidney and the bladder are on the same meridian. So you start to begin to understand where pain is radiating from and the organ for which it may be speaking about. We can do sometimes there are some little tests we can do in terms of massage around the diaphragm and the abdominal wall. And when we do that kind of massage and look at that there, people may find pain. So, for instance, you know, the stomach is on the right and the, on the left, sorry, and the liver is on the right. Yeah, I'm just checking myself. Now, I may be doing a massage through somebody's diaphragm and just under the rib cage, which for lots of times the abdominal walls are like a workhorse, but people fairly rarely think to massage it. And they might go, oh, that's really painful. That's really sensitive. So I get them to lift their head. If they lift their head and the pain starts to decrease, then I know it's not the organ so much. It maybe it's just a muscular issue. Whereas if they lift the head and the pain remains the same, then that's an organ probably talking. But you've got to kind of know how to do it, what you're doing, and the way in which you get the person positioned to do those things. So there's so much to be said to learn about the body, but it really is a fascinating. We really are fascinating bits of kit. It's what we are. We're just these absolutely fascinating bits of kit, but we don't recognize what potential we have and what we can do to not just to help ourselves, but to also inspire other people. So sometimes you are, you know, as I said, we're blessed to be a blessing. And maybe the challenges you go through and the changes you make so you don't experience them anymore are the blessing that someone else needs to have, so they can know that actually you went through it, they could go through the same thing and come out the other side. But of course, it starts with what is in your head. The minute you have made a decision that this is something you cannot do, and that's the conversation I had last week when I spoke with Nipa and I shared. The minute you decide that it's too much and you can't do it, or it's not possible to be done, that's the minute you know you have to do it. Paul Check has a statement, if you can't, you must. You must. And this, you know, it's not that you can't, it's sometimes when we say, oh, I can't do that, It's not that you can't do it many times. It's that you don't want to do it. You know, it may put you out a bit, but it's change is something that many people don't like. But sickness forces change. Death forces change. Redundancy forces change. And sometimes it may seem like a setback, but actually, many times, if you were to step back and to kind of ask, you know, what's the lesson I need to learn here? Or what's the example? Is there an example? Am I the example? Am I being made to be the example? Once we ask those questions, you probably find that many times the setback is actually a setup. You know, if you're not a believer, that's fine. But honestly, in that Bible, Joseph and his coat of many colors, Joseph, right? He went from the pit to the palace. So for Joseph is Jacob. Went from the pit to the palace. Thrown into the pit by his brothers, sold into slavery, went into Potiphar's house. Potiphar's wife made a move on him, thrown into prison, revealed the dream for the Pharaoh of the time, the king of Egypt, forgotten about, finally brought out, and ended up being in charge of everything over Egypt, over the whole of Egypt. And, you know, you might go, oh, it's a story. But it's the truth. These things can happen. Belief changes everything. And sometimes your journey to greatness is never a straight road. You don't just get up, get old, make money, that's it, you're rich. You know, there's all those people that are in big, powerful positions have lost a lot at the same time. There are people out there that make a decision when they get a diagnosis for a sickness and just say, this is not my portion. No, God has the final say. But you've got to have a decision and you've got to move in faith. You've got to have the faith that you can heal yourself. And the body, as I said, is the best bit of kit that can do that. So I'm running out of time. I really hope the show has benefited you. If you'd love to be part of Sacred Ground and the Wellness of Women in the Heart of Soho on the 8th of April, then send me an email, pelvicsecrets@icloud.com. If you'd like to be a part of the next 60-day journey, which starts on the 8th of April, same address, or you can find me on Instagram and X as @pelvicsecrets and Facebook and LinkedIn, Jenny Russell. Go there if you really would love to see some beautiful colour and clothing that my friend designs with African-inspired beautiful clothing. Have a look on my Instagram @pelvicsecrets. But until next week, in health and happiness, stay blessed and definitely stay safe.